welcome to Good Evening, the Alfred Hitchcock Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Shamutella. Joining me, as always, are my ever-constant co-hosts, Chris Haig and Tom Caldwell. Tom, how are you doing today? You know what? Those are some lovely, lovely diamonds you got hanging from your ears there.
Well.
You got some beautiful jewelry.
I was at the mall, and Zales had a half-price sale. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Oh, interesting. Good deal, good deal. Chris, when did you start smoking a pipe?
Look, a lot of things have changed since we've last recorded, and I don't know if you're ready for the new me, and you're just going to have to accept with it. I'm on a journey of self-acceptance, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine that you're smoking. I mean, you are in England and we're in Canada, but I mean, I'm really disappointed that you're podcasting out of your cab.
So, I'm surprised you can see with the amount of smoke, to be honest.
Excellent. Well, we're here to discuss... Look, listen, I don't know who pulled the wool out of our eyes here, but we made some kind of terrible mistake here. The movie I watched was Family Plot. Is that what you guys watched?
Yeah, that's what I watched.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, like, this was clearly not directed by Hitchcock. I mean, firstly, there's location shooting. There's people went out of a studio to film stuff here. This is clearly not directed by Alfred Hitchcock. You know what I'm talking about here?
Okay, Shady. Okay.
I mean, there are some really bad process photography, so like maybe it's partially directed by Hitchcock.
Mm.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's just surprising, and it's refreshing to see that we've got some on-location photography. So it was really nice to see beautiful locations and everything like that. But before we get into this, I just need to apologize to everybody. Like, we missed 2 months here now, and I think every year in June we have trouble. Recording, right? We usually record in June and release in July, or like record in May and release in June. Well, here we are. We're now in July and we're going to release this in August. But I mean, we were busy for 2 months. Like, I went on a trip with my wife to Ireland and everything like that, and then birthdays and everything like that. Every year we have trouble in June. This year we had trouble in May and June. So, but we are back. We are here to record our final movie coverage for Hitchcock with Family Plot. And I think we're going to have a bit of fun here.
I think part of it is that we're near the end of many of our, 5 years of production, and we just don't give a damn anymore.
It's been a long haul, and I mean, this is all the podcasting that I've been doing for the past few months. I quit for like a year, right? And I'm, you know, once we're done this show, I'm going to be done podcasting, I think. I don't think I'll come back to podcasting. I enjoy it, but boy, oh boy, it's a lot of work. Holy smokes. But I couldn't not finish this. I mean, we're so close to the end of it, so I said we had to push through. And you know, Chris and Tom both didn't want to, so I had to drag out like the blackmail. I had some dirt on both of them here, so they said no until I showed them what I had.
I just have
listen, you can't see, you cannot see the look I'm giving Brandon right now. If it manages to cross the Atlantic.
I would like to thank the various people on Twitter and on Facebook who've been chatting recently and just saying how excited they are that we are wrapping up the series and how they're looking forward to our final episode. So anybody that's been commenting and supporting and chatting with us, much love. We appreciate all of your support over the years, for sure.
Thank you, guys. It's so sweet and lovely, but I'm just laughing when Tom said they're real happy to see us wrapping it up. I'm like, yeah, they can't wait for us to end. They're like, just finish already. Just end it.
Get it over with.
Yeah. Now, I've already had one dirty look from Chris, and I'm about to get another one here. Chris, guess what I finally watched?
Nope, because I know we've had this recurring joke, but my brain is so frazzled, I can't even remember now.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Look, we haven't done this for like 2 months.
Wow. It's that Rian Johnson film.
Oh my God. Yeah, what do you think?
Guess what I watched?
Knives Out.
No, I didn't. I watched Glass Onion.
Okay, what do you think of Glass Onion?
I thought it was great. I thought it was fantastic.
Thank you. So, okay.
I thought you were going to get mad because I watched the sequel and I still haven't watched the original.
I mean, honestly, I mean, Knives Out is I'm sorry to everyone who loves Glass Onion. I love Glass Onion. It's great. Knives Out is better, but Glass Onion is still really fun. It's such a fun murder mystery, and that's my favorite genre, so I'm always happy.
I caught a couple of things like right in that scene. I paused it and I turned to my wife and I said this and this, and she's like, really?
Yeah.
So I had the killer on that one on my second guess.
Yes.
So yeah, I did pretty good. I think I did pretty good. So
good.
And now I gotta watch Knives Out. I really want to watch Knives Out.
I will say Knives Out it's, I don't even know how to say it simpler, but it has a better grasp on character, I would say. And so who the main character is, you, and the way the story folds and everything, you will see the various murder mystery influences immediately. But okay. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. I rewatch it every few months, and I love it. So, yeah, I can't wait for you to watch it.
Okay, Tom's given us, he's tapping his watch, we're tapping the watch motion here. He's given us the, let's go, speed it up. Chris, do you want to give us a summary of Family Plot?
Absolutely. So, Blanche, played by Barbara Harris, a less than reputable psychic, and her equally shady boyfriend, George, played by Bruce Dern, are hired by an elderly lady to find her nephew Arthur, played by William Devane, who had been given up for adoption as a boy. With little information to go on, the pair track down the now adult man in San Francisco. Arthur has had a colourful past, including murder and thievery, with girlfriend Fran, played by Karen Black. So, when he discovers he's being tailed, he assumes it's for other reasons. Dun-dun-dun.
Excellent. And a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff here. So, Family Plot was released on April 9th, 1967, with a running time of 120 minutes at a budget of $4.5 million and a box office of $13 million. It's his final directing role, and it was based on Victor Canning's 1972 novel, The Rainburn Pattern, which Ernst Lehman adapted for the screen. The film stars Karen Black, Bruce Dern, Barbara Harris, and William Devane. It was screened at the 1976 Cannes Film Festival, but was not entered into the main competition. So, the novel on which the film is based had been earlier rejected by Lehman, to whom it had been submitted as a potential project for him to either produce or direct, or both. Hitchcock's other collaboration with the screenwriter, North by Northwest, was followed by several aborted projects. Lehman had incurred the director's anger by declining an offer to write the screenplay for No Bail for the Judge, a thriller set in London intended to star Audrey Hepburn, Lawrence Harvey, and actor John Williams. Although Hitchcock eventually had a fine screenplay and pre-production was at an advanced stage, that film was never made. Hepburn became pregnant and Hitchcock turned to another project, Psycho, instead. Okay, talking a bit about some of the character actors in it. So Karen Black, I don't know if you guys have suffered from my constant discussion of Children of the Corn 4. Have you guys been victims of that?
No.
I mean, no? I've listened to Franchise Fatigue, but I've never listened to the Children of the Corn because I've never seen them.
Yeah, well, we didn't cover those, but it was a running joke over on Franchise Fatigue that I love Children of the Corn 4. And Karen Black is in Children of the Corn 4.
Is she in, I want to say, because the name's really familiar, is she in the airport films? Is that right now?
Oh, I don't know. I actually haven't seen them. I'm not sure.
Airport 77, I think? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. So, Karen Black, formerly Ziegler, was an American actress, screenwriter, singer, and songwriter. She rose to prominence for her work in various studio and independent films in the 1970s, frequently portraying eccentric and offbeat characters, and established herself as a figure of New Hollywood. Her career spanned over 50 years and includes nearly 200 credits in both independent and mainstream films. Black received numerous accolades throughout her career, including 2 Golden Globe Awards as well as an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actress. Bruce Dern is an American actor. He received several accolades, including the Cannes Film Festival Award for Best Actor and the Silver Bear for Best Actor. He was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for Coming Home in 1978 and the Academy Award for Best Actor for Nebraska in 2013. He is also a BAFTA Award, 2-time Genie Award, and 3-time Golden Globe Award nominee. And he's also the father of Laura Dern. Barbara Harris was an American actress. She appeared in such movies as A Thousand Clowns, Plaza Suite, Nashville, Family Plot, Freaky Friday, Peggy Sue Got Married, and Gross Point Blank. Harris won a Tony Award and was nominated for an Academy Award. She also received 4 Golden Globe nominations. And William Devane was an American actor known for his role as Greg Sumner on the primetime soap opera Knots Landing and James Heller on the Fox serial drama 24 and 24 Live Another Day. Now, that's what I know him for, is from 24. He's also known for his work in films such as Family Plot, Marathon Man, Rolling Thunder, Payback, and Space Cowboys. And we have our Hitchcock cameo. I didn't clock the time, but everybody caught it. Everybody caught his cameo.
Yep.
Hiding behind the door, we saw only his shadow, and only his silhouette this time. So, excellent. Okay, well, let's jump into our discussion on this film. Tom, let's start with you this time. What did you think? Was this your first time seeing it, or had you seen it before?
I believe I've seen it, or seen parts of it before. So, yeah, I watched it on... I rented it on Amazon Prime and watched it on the big TV yesterday. And I enjoyed it. Again, it's one of those... It's a modern 70s film, so it's really tricky. It's really hard to see it as a Hitchcock film. And it does, again, kind of have that American television photography style. Like, everything's really brightly lit. But again, getting away from the technical stuff, it's a fun movie. It's entertaining. There's a lot of parts of it that I really enjoyed. I've got a couple of Psycho references that I want to ask you guys about later. But I did enjoy it.
I love it,
it
when you go Psycho on us, Tom.
And I definitely recommend it. Like, it's, you know, it was a fun movie. And it was an interesting storyline for sure, right?
Chris, what did you think?
I was so pleasantly surprised by this because I went into this knowing, like, okay, it's Hitch's last proper theatrical film. You know, I'd read about the plot. I hadn't seen it before, and I'd heard bits about the plot, and I was like, oh, okay, I don't know if this is going to be particularly good. It reminded me, there's a British film called, and you might have heard of it, it might have made its way over there, called Seance on a Wet Afternoon.
Don't know that one, no.
Nope. So it's essentially about a fake psychic who plans to kidnap someone's daughter so she can then come in and be like, oh, I have a prediction, I know where she is, and get the reward money. Mm-hmm. And then it all goes wrong. It's in the 60s. It's very good if you want to watch it. It's a very good British film. So the plot reminded me a bit of that because you've got like this, you know, kind of shady psychic that struggles me, ends me, and then there's this kind of overarching mystery air plot going on. But I watched it. I'm very much in Tom's camp of, oh, this is just fun. This is like a little caper. There is a bit of darkness to it with the character of Arthur and stuff like that. But mostly it was just, it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was fun. I had a much better time with this than I envisioned going into it, and I'm really glad I watched it.
Mm-hmm. So this is the second time that I've seen it, and it's, again, it's been a really long time, so I remembered virtually nothing about this movie. I thoroughly loved it. Like, what a breath of fresh air from the last couple of films we've been covering here. It's really, I think, a callback to classic Hitch. Like, knowing that this is written by Lehman, like, you can feel North by Northwest throughout this film, with the, you know, the car out of control going down the mountain is very similar to when Cary Grant is all drunk in the North by Northwest there. You know, the tone of the film is very similar to North by Northwest. But you've got this really interesting mystery that happens at the beginning, where the blonde woman comes in and it won't talk while she's trying to get the diamond and whatnot. Like, all of these things feel very, very classic Hitch, and I'm really glad that we got this as a final film to cover, because I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. So this is definitely... Like, without tipping my hand early, this is definitely top 10 Hitchcock for me. I love this film. I thought it was great.
I was going to say, I mean, I was having a look back through, because now we've come to the end of his filmography, and I was looking back and sort of, from The Birds onwards, there are 5 films. And out of that 5, not including family plots, so out of that 4, I was like, okay, so I didn't really enjoy Topaz. I didn't really care for Marnie. Frenzy I liked, but it's quite a grim... Mm-hmm. dark film, and it's very much like a sort of a twisted, you know, Psycho is scary, but sort of Frenzy is even more twisted and dark and bitter and all that kind of stuff. And then I can't remember what the other ones. Torn Curtain, which I had really mixed feelings on, and which I was very ambivalent towards. But no, having this and knowing that this is the way that Hitch goes out in terms of his filmography is really, I don't know if I'd say enjoyable, but it's a nice way he ended things.
Yeah,
particularly the last shot and everything.
I'm surprised, like, with this one here, because I don't hear a lot of people talk about this movie. Like, this isn't one that's listed on a lot of people's lists. You know, it's not something that people talk about that often. It's not something that really gets recognized. I mean, our guest that we had for Frenzy there, Michael Allen Bailey, like, he said he really loved this movie. So I was looking forward to checking it out. But this is one that doesn't get mentioned a whole heck of a lot. So I think I would put this into a category of an underrated Hitchcock film.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would, yeah, this is the film that I am most, and probably because it's recent as well, but this is the film out of all Hitch's films that I am most eager to rewatch, because I've only had time to watch it once this week, and I was like, I really want to sit down and watch this again, because I have a feeling it could climb the rankings a bit, in terms of how much sort of pleasure there is, and, you know, there is fun in it, and even though, you know, you joked about it saying, oh, it's not a Hitch movie and all that sort of thing, and it's very 70s and, you know, there's locations and that sort of thing, there does seem to be some of the fun that wasn't present in the other in the later films of his career.
I have to remark that people keep using the phrase fake psychic as if there's such a thing as a real psychic. But...
What? You don't believe in psychics, Tom?
I know. Hang on. I have a big tangent. So, the whole idea of a seance or a medium, I love it. It's very fantastical. It's midway carnival. It's, like, it's just the whole thing, the whole con artist concept and the whole idea of talking to the dead. It's very interesting. So there's a scene. Okay, some background. We had our dog that lived for 10 years, and we recently had to put him down. And a couple of days after we put him down, two of our deadbolts in our house broke, and we had a theft from our backyard. So I was like, that's my dog. He's haunting us. He's like, there's no one to protect your house. So there's a scene in this movie where George Lumley is looking at the two gravestones, and he's comparing them. And the one looks really new and fresh, and the other one looks really old and aged. And when he touches the one gravestone, one of our cat and dog toys, it's like an electric flashlight that beeps, lit up on our living room floor. And I'm like, that's my dog talking to me from beyond the grave. Anyway, so I had a medium, I had a seance moment with my dog during this film. But I have to say, all the 70s touches I really enjoyed, like the psychic idea, the fashions and the cars.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a lot of fun, for sure.
Did Cash watch a lot of Hitchcock films with you?
He, if anything, right now would be barking in the house while we were taping the show, and I'd be like, shut the dog up, bring the dog in from the yard. But yeah, he tried to get on mic a few times. Can I quickly go through my psycho references too, since I'm on a trivia kick?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So, George and Blanche are driving in the taxi, and out of nowhere, the blonde lady walks out in the intersection and cuts them off. And they look at each other, and then she keeps walking. So this happened in Psycho, when she was stealing the money from the office and she was trying to drive away, and her boss walked out on the road, which Chris pointed out is also referred to in Pulp Fiction. So that's a pretty famous scene and a nice little Hitchcock referring back to Hitchcock sort of moment. And also, there's an intersection with the road sign Bates Road. Mm-hmm. on the intersection. So there were a couple of very subtle psycho references, and I have to bring one more in where the seller, Arthur and Fran, for a living, their thing is that they kidnap rich people for ransom, and they have a room in the cellar, kind of like in the psycho house in Bates Hotel, where they, in the mansion, where they have that room where the mother is. But separate from that, I love this room in the cellar. And realistically, that room in the cellar, which is so well like it's hidden. It's a secret wall. It's a secret door. It's a private jail cell. That is one of that's got to be the most evil cage in any Hitchcock movie. Like that is a very, very sinister thing. They treat it very casually, but that is a very evil concept that they have, this locked jail cell behind a secret wall in the basement of the home that nobody would know about. And that is a very, very interesting touch, a very macabre thing, a very evil thing to have. And I do not remember anything like that in any other Hitchcock film.
Yeah, I don't think we have anything like that. I was thinking of something. There's something vaguely familiar about that concept, but it probably came later. And I don't know if it necessarily was inspired by this or whatever, but I seem to recall a room where they had their prisoners in the basement, something like this, where there was the voice was altered and stuff like that as well. Honestly, I could just be remembering this film because it's been a long time since I saw it. So, I think one of the interesting things, because we talked about it last time with Frenzy and how I said the main character was just such a dislikable guy, right? I talked about him being dislikable. And while I like these characters in this one, I do find it interesting that, like, both sets of couples in this are crooks. You know, they're crooks in different ways, right? Ones are, like, major crooks with theft and ransom and whatnot and kidnapping. And the other people are minor crooks. But it's, like, it's not like they're good people either, right? Like, they go out of their way to con people out of money, right? And at first, it's for, like, small dollar amounts, like $500 or whatever they're talking about at the beginning of the in the cab there. But now they've got this opportunity to make $10,000 because this old lady feels guilty about getting her sister to give up her child, this illegitimate child. And so she wants these people to find him so that she can make him her heir and, you know, make things right and whatnot. But it's just, it's fascinating that they're so similar in it. And even in, I was reading the chapter in Donald Spotto's book, The Art of Alfred Hitchcock, 50 Years of His Motion Picture. And he does bring up a lot of comparisons between the couples here. I just want to read a little bit of this one paragraph here. So structurally, this is the purest film Hitchcock made since The Birds. It begins and concludes at night and with a tight close-up of Blanche, eyes closed in the first scene, winking in the last. The comparison between the two sets of couples, delineated fully below, are unfolded similarly. The first, we are shown the female doing her part as a fake, Blanche as a medium, and Fran as a blonde. Then the respective men are introduced, each in a lengthy dialogue in their automobiles, Lumley's taxi and Adamson's black sedan. Then we move from the opening dialogue between Blanche and Lumley to the Fran Adamson story as Fran crosses a street and is nearly hit by Lumley's taxi. The runaway car sequence, which nearly kills Blanche and Lumley, is perfectly balanced by another daylight sequence, the quick getaway Adamson and Fran make after kidnapping the bishop. The film's structure is also neat in the introduction of Julia's sleeping problems. She tried to get sleeping pills without prescription at a pharmacy, while Adamson drugs his victims into a coma for their abduction and released. So I think that's pretty interesting here. It goes on, there's a little bit more. I definitely recommend this book. It was a great read to follow along with over the past couple of years. But it's interesting how he's like made a lot of similar beats in the film for both sets of couples.
Yeah, it's an interesting parallel. And it is good that you have these characters operating on sort of different shades of grey. Because even if you look at Arthur, he is the villain of the piece. You know, you're saying, oh, well, it's really macabre, this setup and all that sort of thing. I mean, it is established that he killed his adopted parents many years ago, and it's established that, you know, he, you know, does all these dark things, and he has this sort of malignant presence and everything. But it is so cool that you do have these two couples who are sort of set in opposition to each other, and like you said, they go on similar tracks, and it... you know, they're not always perfectly aligned, but it does, you know, I love the ending of this film. Because, yeah, it bookends it with Blanche, and you get that amazing final shot, which I think if that is the last shot you ever see of Hitch, I think a wink to the audience is literally... Well, that's the thing, though. It's literally a woman winking to the audience, and you're like, oh, that is the perfect way to end a film career. It's such a fourth wall break. I think it's just, yeah, brilliant. And then, obviously, the narrative irony of the two people who've been imprisoning people throughout the past years, their fate, at least for that moment, is to be imprisoned in the house, but then also, obviously, going straight to jail. I think that's quite... It's a nice, ironic thing, and even though you end up sympathising with, you know, a pair of crooks, it's not, you know, they are sort of the, you know, they're the lighter shades of grey. You know, they're not heroes. Well, they are, they're not heroes by any sense, but they're not outright villainous. Yeah, yeah, they're not evil and all that sort of thing. I mean, I'm laughing because I'm thinking about the sequence in the church.
Mm-hmm.
That is so darkly funny. The idea of them just kidnapping a bishop out of broad daylight and no one stopping anything because they're like, oh, it's a church.
Yeah, they don't do anything.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, it doesn't mean anything. And everyone's going like, oh no, we're just letting it happen. And I'm like, this is mad. This is wild. Is this what Americans do in their churches? Yeah.
It's important to remember that Hitchcock himself was not healthy at the time of this production. And there was a lot of him compromising and him not being healthy, not being well enough to do everything that he wanted to do. And shortly after this production, he literally retired. He just told his studios and his partners, I'm done. And so again, that wink in the final scene was a beautiful, like Chris said, a beautiful fourth wall break. There was kind of a tribute to the significance of that moment. And apparently on set, they had discussed, they wanted Hitchcock to appear on the stairwell behind her and kind of do a wink to the, or a hello to the camera. But of course, that would have no dramatic sense. It wouldn't have any, you know, that wouldn't make any sense in the nature of the film. So he didn't want to do that. But it was what a moment. Like, this was his final film. And he probably had a pretty good inclination during the production that this would have been, this, you know, what was going to happen. So, a tribute, like, much respect, a real time to salute him and his body of work and all that he achieved. And it's a real pivotal moment in the history of film to have this production end the way it did.
In that book by Donald Spotto, it had said that he had just had a pacemaker installed during pre-production of his film, and he had lots of problems with arthritis and stuff going on during the making of the film. But actually, the other book that I have, Alfred Hitchcock, The Complete Films, talks that he, after this, he started actually working on another script for a film called The Short Night, a script based on a British spy, George Blake, who escaped from prison and was helped out of the country by gangland London. Hitch eventually gave into his failing health and made the decision to stop making films in May of 1979. So, and then he passed away in April of 1980. This ended up being his last one here. He was actually planning on working on one more.
So less than a year after he retired, he passed away.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah. Less than a year. So, and I think he knew that he...
I think in general he always had layers of pre-production going on. Like, he always had another film in the works when he was working on a film. He would never stop production and then start a new film. Like, he always had something in the works, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, what a significant moment, right?
Yeah. I want to go back to one of the other aspects of the film. Like, I was completely captivated by this movie. Like, I was all in. I know that I gotta get the character's name here. I'm bad with character's name. But that one guy that worked at the gas station. I'm gonna get his
character's
name.
He was a rich character though, eh?
Oh, I loved
him. He had personality. He was
Ed Lauder's great. He's such a character actor.
But he was not happy to be there. Like, he was just, what do you want?
Yeah. Looking him up on IMDb or on Letterboxd, he's got 129 film credits. Ed Lauder does, but his character there, Joseph Maloney, like he calls Bruce Dern's character like an amateur and whatnot. But I think they were very good at what he did. Like, that whole dark sequence where he's investigating, he notices the fake headstone. He looks into that. He gets the information that, oh, somebody tried to buy a death certificate, but then stopped and didn't follow up on it. Gets the information about the family that died in a fire. You know, like, there's this whole rich backstory to this movie. Like, it's a really elaborate plot, and I really loved that. I loved how deep this went into the one character's past. So they're trying to find this guy just to give him money, yet there's this whole convoluted past for him. It was amazing. I loved it.
And there was a lot of that deceptive, who are you? Are you a cop? Are you a lawyer? Well, I'm with a law firm. But that doesn't matter. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
That great kind of gray area pretending to be a detective.
Yeah. But even that sequence when he was talking to that woman in the store, he's like, the chauffeur's daughter, right? When he was talking to her, and he's, oh, there's money in it for me? Yeah, let me ask you some questions first, and we'll talk about the money later. And I don't know. I just love this movie. I thought this was fantastic. Like, wow, am I glad that we managed to finish these off, talk about these, because this movie was just wonderful.
If we had produced our series, we've always been very proud to say that we've produced our series chronologically. We've done every film. We've never avoided a film that might be hard to talk about. So if we had produced our series in the alternate format, where we just kind of picked and choose which films to talk about, would this one have landed like in our top sort of 20 or top 30 productions?
Like, you mean early on in the run? Probably
like,
not.
Or would we have picked this? Like, if we were just looking at the list of films and saying, okay, we're going to do 30 episodes of a podcast and just pick the best films, most interesting films, and skip all the, you know, Juno and the Peacocks, right? Like, all the hard to...
Mr. and Mrs. Smith,
like
that
all
trash.
The, all, the hard to, all the hard to handle stuff, right? Like, we're going to be more popular and populist and just do the... films that people would be attracted to. Would we have covered this? I don't think we would have.
Yeah, I mean, who was talking about that garbage film Psycho? Bah! Yeah. But no, I don't know. We might not have, though, right? Because like, this one I didn't remember, so I didn't know anything about it. I couldn't remember if it was good or bad.
I've always had that impression that in the halls of Hitchcock Academia or whatever, that Family Plot is kind of like, it's kind of like, you know, maybe watch it, maybe don't, right?
Because you don't hear a lot about it, right? People don't talk about it, but that's unfortunate. That's a shame.
Yeah.
I got to say, that's a shame. So, Chris, do you have any final thoughts? Anything else you want to talk about that we missed?
I mean, ultimately, no, because it's a film. Like I said, it's the one that I'm going to walk away from you know, the whole podcast project and go, I need to rewatch this. And in fact, if I've got time this week, I might even try and rewatch it or grab a proper Blu-ray of it and just sit down and just analyze it, because I was so pleasantly surprised by this. Like, a lot of the hitches that I hadn't seen, I'd seen like little bits of the plot or the synopsis and I'd gone, oh, okay, all right, not as good, not as whatever. But with this, I was, again, so pleasantly surprised. The most pleasantly surprised I've been by a hitch movie that I've seen. Sorry, I'm really trying to sneeze.
Oh,
I know, I'm not like getting emotional. I'm there just going like, don't sneeze on camera, don't sneeze on camera, don't sneeze on camera. But yeah, I just think, you know, if this had to be Hitch's send-off, I think it's a very fitting one.
Yeah.
It's sort of quietly triumphant in its own way. Mm-hmm. And I love that the last time you see him in these, it isn't him as a person, it's him, it's the silhouette, it's the symbol, it's you know, immediately recognisable still. If you see that outline, you know that it's Hitchcock, and what an impact he has as a director. And so he sort of moves from being a director to a symbol and a style and a name of his own, and I just think that's incredible. And I just really, you know, it's not going to be in my top Hitch films, but I think it has potential to at least be in the top 15, 20?
Yeah. Okay. Well, remember that, yes, you want to rewatch this one here, but you also have to rewatch Topaz a bunch of times for our upcoming Topaz Minute podcast.
There's that stare again, dear listener. There it is.
Tom, anything else you want to add?
Yeah.
Again, much respect to Hitchcock and his wonderful body of work, and, you know, it's a shame that we can't really just talk about this film as a film, because there's so much weight so much significance to it. But yeah, it's an enjoyable film. If people, I think people should get out there and watch it. And it didn't really knock me off my feet or anything, but I appreciate the significance of watching this and arriving at the end of the list of his filmography. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this movie. I'm giving it, my rating on this one here is 5 fake headstones.
Oh, I will give it 4.5 accidental explosions when the couple that you're trying to kill evade you and you end up killing yourself.
Oh, that was amazing. I love that.
I'll give it 4 out of 5 fake voices by the fake psychic pretending to be talking from the afterworld.
Oh, man, I should have opened my podcast that way. We're like, oh, I'm conjuring up Brandon from the great Saskatchewan. Excellent, right on. Well, that's all we got for you this time. I'm just looking through my book here to see what film we're covering next. Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
We're not.
We will be back for another episode, though. We are going to do a recap on this one here. So don't delete us from your podcast feed yet. We do have one more episode coming for you here. We'll get to it as soon as we can. So Tom, you're on Twitter still at TomCaldwell3000.
Instagram at my big thing is my TikTok DJ Empire, DJ Tommy 3000 on TikTok. Come and chill and hang out and enjoy the music.
DJ Empire. I'm just picturing you like rolling down the streets of Vegas in your fat car with like big tires and, you know, your big brim hat and, you know, fur coat.
It's the lifestyle, baby. It's the price that we pay.
For fame.
I will say, every time I come across one of your TikTok lives, I mean, you are always doing great music, because every time I'm always like, oh, hey, Tom. It's very good music. You should absolutely check Tom out on TikTok.
Thank you for that, Chris. I appreciate that.
And Chris has his new Twitter handle at The Diamond Thief.
How do you know there's going to be someone who actually hears this and there is the Diamond Thief and they're going to, what the hell? No, I'm on Twitter at @high_boy. I'm honestly surprised. I'm like, I didn't think this podcast would outlive Twitter, but here we are.
Yeah, we outlived Twitter. Can you believe that? So,
I mean, I'm on Threads, I guess, but no one's following me on there, which is fine. I'm on TikTok and no one's following me on there and I'm happy with that. But yeah, just say hi on Twitter.
Excellent, right on. I'm Letterboxd. Find me on Letterboxd where you can read my crappy reviews of movies and whatnot. I mean, I just watched all the X-Men movies. Like, I had seen only the original three, and I just plowed through all the rest of them. So I've been having fun. You know what? That's the thing. Is like, now that I'm not podcasting for like my part-time job that doesn't pay me anything, I'm having fun just watching movies that I want to watch, like good or bad. I just watched the Deadpool movies, so.
Because part of me loves the idea of Letterboxd, but I don't watch enough films.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a low commitment, in which case I'm like, okay, I will go on every 2 weeks and go rewatch Knives Out again.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, you just go on whenever you want. So check me out. I'm at Brandon Metella on there. So, you know, I put silly reviews of movies and whatnot. But you can see my hot takes for ranking films, and you can see my Hitchcock rankings. I got that on there now, so it's a lot of fun. Thank you to Jason Cullimore for creating our wonderful theme music. Thank you to the Fandom Podcast Network for hosting us. You can find us in their feed as well as our own independent feed. And don't forget Canny and Atherin's, Annie and Catherine's podcast, Good Evening at Alfred Hitchcock Presents podcast. They are still on hiatus right now, but they got some great back catalog of some great episodes, so be sure to check that out. And so this is it for our Hitchcock movies. So now if you guys want to go through much quicker than a 5-year period, now you can go back and do like once a week if you want and listen to a podcast.
Oh my God, yeah, you can binge watch now,
yeah.
Binge listen to our whole discography.
To the whole shebang. So, yeah, our whole discography. We are changing our name. We are the artists formerly known as Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock Podcast. We are now, we're going to call ourselves The Beatles.
What do you think? But spelt like the actual, like, Like the scarab beetles or whatever.
The scarab beetles. So, excellent, right on. Well, until next time, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.